COVID happened, right? No one can go hike, no one can go camping. So we went almost zero overnight for...
Hey guys, Moo just launched in Malaysia and currently they are running a campaign. The first promotion, if you sign up for an account and deposit 8,000 ringgit, you will get one Apple stock for free. Yes! Instant return without doing anything, you already get close to 1,000 ringgit return immediately. The second promotion, if you do not have 8,000 ringgit, tak apa. If you have 500 ringgit, pun boleh juga. What happens is when you deposit 500 ringgit, you will get back 100 ringgit in cash vouchers. That is a 20% return instantly. So what are you waiting for? Go and sign up for a Moomoo Malaysia account using the link in the description below. If you have been thinking about starting a side hustle and making money while holding your main job, now Mike is the perfect person to talk to. With only 8,000 ringgit, he started PTT Outdoor. When the company took off, he took the plunge to go into it full time. Why outdoor equipment? So Mike, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me, man.
It's truly amazing to see how your journey actually came to fruition, because when I look through your CVs and your LinkedIn profile, I noticed that all this while you have been a guy who has been looking for a lot of different opportunities, and finally PTT took off. Maybe let's take a step back into your life, right? Can you take us back to a moment that is in your early life that defined the view of money and success?
I come from a typical Asian family, so money is always something that you hear is being reaffirmed in my head daily, that, you know, money is scarce, there's not enough money and all that. And it gave me a very lack of abundance mindset towards money. But my mom at that time, I was 8 years old, she brought me to MBank. That time they had a promotion where if you open a bank account, you get a camel tabung.
Oh yeah.
I wanted a tabung more than the bank account. At that point now, as I reflect back, when I was at 8 years old, she started to ask me to save money, right? 50 cents, 20 cents, 10 cents, even 1 ringgit, whatever money that I earn, I have to save it up. I appreciate my mom for that because she taught me the value of saving money. Now in hindsight, I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think it's something that... could have been better, the lack mentality, but it grew me to who I am today.
I do realize that for both of us, we have a similar background in terms of coming from a family where money is scarce, and our parents actually taught us the value of saving, right? And I guess that kind of helped you to actually save that first 8,000 ringgit as well, to actually start off PTT.
Correct.
But another part of it is, I also realized that we tend to have this idea of bootstrapping.
Yes.
Right? Like we are... very untypical in that sense where around us, we see a lot of startup people like splurging money like crazy. The first thing they do is find a lot of money to go and spend, right? But you are one of those who actually think about saving instead of spending most of the time.
Common misconception in startup is that you have an idea, you start raising fund. The proper way, in my opinion, for startup is you have an idea, you test it with as many people as possible, at the lowest cost as possible, just to verify your idea. And if it's not a good idea, which people are not willing to pay for, then you pivot. The misconception that we have been hammered in our head in the startup world, you would know that raise fund. And we kind of glorify a lot of startups that manage to raise fund. You see in the news, commonly it's like company A managed to raise 1.4 million. Or company B managed to raise 3 million from this venture cap or whatever. But they never glorify those who say this company bootstrapped 10 years just to lead all the way to exit. But true to respect, I respect those guys who can actually bootstrap all the way, because that's tenacity, man. You ever feel like you can't pay your stuff at the end of the month, you barely make it through, and you have to delay your own payment because you want to pay your stuff first? If you can go through all that, yeah, I mean, you're a strong business person. Yeah.
True. Looking through your LinkedIn profile, I found something really interesting, because at the early of your career, you wrote in your first job title there when you were working in Walmart. That was in 2007, right?
Yes.
And you wrote there, this is where I first learned how to sell. Now, compared to the rest of the others, it was more of a property. It's the only one they wrote it that way. So I was wondering to myself, did that kind of shape how you looked at career or shape how you looked at your ability?
I was working at so-called Walmart Digital when I was 17. After SPM, you don't want to work for your family, you go out and look for a job. And at that time, I saw this company called Walmart Digital. Stupid enough, I thought it was the actual Walmart from America. After 1 year of working there, only I realized, Hey, this is not Walmart, but that is another story.
So what was it if it's not Walmart?
So it was selling digital camera. I went for the interview. I aced it, of course. I was 17, right? They offered a salary of 600 ringgit. I remember exactly the amount. And that time I felt, oh, I'm so rich now. You have 600. And they give commission also, you know. So that was it was a defining moment in how I see where my skill is, which is to sell. I got a job. The next day I went to work, right? They say, okay, come the next day. Okay, good. I'm working for Walmart Digital now, right? So they threw me to a kiosk. They threw me to a kiosk in a place in Ipoh called Yik Fung. That's the Lauyat or Sungai Wang of Ipoh, where it's the hardest, very dodgy kind of area. That's where I had to learn a lot about digital camera, because this company actually sells digital camera. So you go, you prepare the things yourself, you have your stuff out, you start learning about digital camera all by yourself. But what I learned throughout that whole experience is the hardworking side of things, and also you have to know your product super, super well. You have to know it more than anyone in the market, because I was selling digital camera. I was 17. I know nothing about digital camera, nothing at all. And that time it was those pixel, how long the battery lasts and all that. I studied it very, very extremely hard. So it shaped me to who I am today, because same goes for a lot of other businesses as well. If you want to start a business, you got to be the best in the industry for whatever that you are selling. So that's what I learned from Walmart Digital. 1 year later, I realized, oh, okay, they're actually not the Walmart from America. They are just there was an extra L behind the name. So, so I thought, oh, okay. But you know, those are the good times where you learn how to sell. That area had a lot of foreigners as well. Not the atas type, but the, you know, Indonesians and all that finish their 3 years tenure, they'll buy digital camera and send it back to their family.
Yes.
They like to come buy from me because I know how to communicate with them even.
Right.
So if you can sell to people who are not even your own people,
right.
Yeah, your capability to sell is very, very high.
Wow, that explains why your bahasa is so good, right?
My bahasa is very good. My proficiency in language is very high. It's an advantage, of course, but I can still sell a digital camera today and again. Learning to sell is basically knowing the product very well, knowing how it can help the customer, knowing what the customer really wants. Let's say they want to bring it home, you know, they want a digital camera, they want good pricing, they want good functions. All that you can learn when you are doing your part-times or your full-times.
Until today, what I do notice is that on PTT Outdoor site, you do play a role in selling as well, because you appear in the content, you talk about it. It's not just your stuff, but you yourself, the CEO, coming down to the ground and selling.
Correct, because we want to believe in our product. And I want to be the one who tests it. As a matter of fact, that's what people see in the front. What they don't see at the back is that until today, I test my product. So let's say camping, we'll bring the whole team out for camping. And then we'll test. For example, the last round of camping, it was raining very heavily. And that's perfect. Because that's how you test your tent, to make sure there's no water leaking and all that. Because we can always preach, you know, like, oh, our tent is the best. Our inflatable mat is the most comfortable one. But can your staff really sleep on it and they can wake up the next morning saying that it's a good sleep? You gotta test it. And until now, we are on ground to test it. Even myself, because I want to test my own product.
Talking about your experience as well, aside from sales, right? What I do realize is that ever since you started working, you did not just stay on with your main job, but you were consistently creating side incomes.
Yep.
You worked on many different kind of things, like bookup.my and then yellowtuktuk.com.
Yeah.
And then only PTT, right? So was any of those successful ventures that you did before, was there anything that like gave you this idea that, I can one day build a side income that's so successful that I can quit my job?
It goes back all the way to even university, as a matter of fact. The old story of university is I have a car, and students needed to go to different destination.
Okay.
So I started we call it transport service.
Wow.
Yeah. And that time there was no Grab. It was 10, 12 years back, so no Grab. So student cab, that's what we call it. Printed posters, post it around. So I call it Mike's Awesome Transportation. We have the price list. I remember USM to Queens Bay Mall is $7. And then we started getting a lot of calls. And then that money was earned enough so that I can pay off my university also. Because my parents didn't pay me much, didn't give me much allowance and all that. So I had to either work part-time, which takes a lot of time, or I can start a student cab because I have a car. Then from there, I got a bunch of friends who also have car, and then I said, hey, you guys want to drive? We can share the the profit lah. They started to help me with driving around, which is a nowadays I don't think the idea will work anymore. But back then it was very high in demand. No, because no Grab, huh?
No Grab. You were basically the first Grab 101, man. First version, bro.
And business-wise, that trick was because I had that bunch of friends. So every time someone called, I never say no. I'll take it. Because we have different class schedules. So if I cannot, my friend can. If my friend cannot, the other friend can. So that's where I earned a good chunk of money to pay off my university. Right. Then I started Book Up. Book Up was an idea where, you know how students have a lot of textbooks. After they study, the textbooks is like 100 ringgit, 200 ringgit, yes. But they don't use it anymore after one semester. So the idea was to get those textbooks and sell it on the website. It was a good idea, but operationally, it wasn't easy because we needed to get the books from the students. So across Malaysia, there's a lot of people who want to sell their textbooks, but it was difficult to send one way and then send out the other way. So it's double shipping. Yeah, so that one, I would not consider it fail. I consider it was a stepping stone for me to learn how to build websites, do online marketing, come up with content so that people know about Book Up at that time, and then propel me to where I am today, PTT Outdoor. It's also an online business, it's a product-based business, and that was the foundation. So people like to say, you either win or you learn. Yellow Tuk Tuk is the same, it's a blog for travel, I did it on the side. We managed to get quite a bit of traffic. As a matter of fact, we had big names also. Not super big names, but book authors and all that who came, and I wrote blog posts about them. That taught me a lot about writing. So all those progressive small things that people would consider it a failure, I consider it as a learning blocks to where I am today, which is very interesting. But I like the student cap one the most.
I mean, it's enough to pay off your university. Yeah, means it's in the five-figure range.
Yeah, yeah, no. Over 4 semesters. I did it for 2 years. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, still. It's like...
I mean, we could afford fast food. You know, you eat at a cafe, right? Yeah, we can afford we as in the whole group of us can afford fast food, you know. So that was fun times.
It was also like one of those fun activities you did that kind of gave you that confidence that you can actually make money, right?
Yes, and also it teaches you the how you want to be smart with business. Like what I said just now, finding a few friends, knowing your competitors, they cannot take some certain schedule. Even things like, for example, even that student cap time, we had car SOP, which is very funny. We checked the car, which is what Grab now does actually. Right. The car is not old, more than 7 years cannot. Before that, we were checking the cars already. So if my friend's car is too old, then I was like, sorry lah, you know we are friends, we'll remain friends lah, you cannot be a partner. But the car has to be new enough, inside, don't put your basketball there or your basketball shoe there, very smelly one. All put at the trunk, make sure the car is comfortable, you know, don't play your bad music, right? Play good music, all that.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, it's a real operation. You know? Wow. Even among friends, very funny one. I guess that's why people like us, you know? All that small things, yeah.
I was wondering, because you had this opportunity to do well, but all this while you were still being a part-timer, you did not go into it full-time.
Yep.
But instead, when you graduated, you decided that you should come out and do a full-time job while trying all this.
Yep.
Why?
For me, at that time, the advice that I got was more on the stability side of things, because as a fresh graduate, you want to get your EPF, SOCSO, EIS done so that you can buy a house.
Oh.
The most typical stuff Asian will go through. You buy your house first, you get your first house first. So without a stable paycheck, you can't. And the part-time stuff is part-time, so you can't get it stable yet. So I decided personally that, you know what, I'm going to get a job first. I'm going to save up a bit more capital and I'm going to make sure I have that runway before I actually jump out to do business. But meanwhile, I will still do my business at night or whenever I'm not working on weekends. 9 to 6 is for the full-time job and then I get some rest. I go to the gym. 8 to 11, usually I'll just do on the side.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, it was hard slog.
That was really disciplined as well,
yeah,
right?
Really disciplined. But those hours were enough to do a part-time. Even packing. Packing was done at night. Then I put it there in the morning before I go to work. I just drop it off.
Then after how many years before you decided that you should actually jump into a 100% full-time entrepreneur?
5 years, if I'm not mistaken.
5 years?
5 years. Around 5 years. And the trigger that made me jump was I started PTT Outdoor already that time. We had revenue on a monthly basis. I made sure that the profit that we have for PTT Outdoor was high enough, higher than my basic salary on a consistent basis for more than 3 months. Then I decided, you know what? It's time to jump. It's time to make it big.
That time, did you already have some staff or something like that?
No. It was fully alone.
Fully alone? Still a solopreneur?
Yes. I built the website alone. Digital marketing is done alone. Product uploads is done alone. And that was the beginning.
Was it scary when you first take the plunge?
It was scary, but the manageable kind of scary, because I already had a business experience. I know where PTT Outdoor is going in that direction. And there was no team, so I was doing a lot of CS myself. And the feedback was good. And no one actually asked me to take the plunge. You know, no customer say you should do this full time, because they already think that I'm doing this full time. So with all that pieces in place, I decided, you know what, give myself time, 1 year. If I don't make this, there's always the chance to go back to another job. But I don't want to live with the regret that this opportunity, I didn't take it. So 1 year, you can kind of gauge whether your business will be good or not. Not to say successful, but good enough to be better than where you are today in your job.
How many staff do you have right now in PTT?
We have 12 full-time members.
So the company has grown significantly over past few years. Yeah. So first question here regarding the business is, when did PTT hit its first $1 million revenue?
It was around 2020. So we were having a good year right before the pandemic. And then the pandemic hit. That was bad times for us, very bad times. But right before the pandemic, we hit our first million in sales.
What did you do that made you get to that first million?
I'll be very honest with you. I don't remember the exact time. It's definitely in the path, because we are, at that time, we have, I think if I'm not mistaken, about 60 members. And we are still very product obsessed. I know personally in my heart that it's a matter of time before we're going to hit that 1 million revenue mark. Right, we are obsessed with two things: one, the customer; one, the product. And I know that by controlling things that I want, which is the product and the customer, we are definitely reached there. The number is a bonus. As long as we focus on the product and the customer, eventually we'll be there. So when we finally reach, I didn't know. And then when we're doing our month review, then I'll be like, oh, okay, we crossed our 1 million this year. Okay, let's keep going. It was the middle of the year, right? Like, okay, let's keep going. Let's keep going. We can still push more. That was my perception at that time.
That's why when it comes to running a business, ultimately, it's about keeping your eye on the ball, not on the scoreboard, right?
Yeah. And for us, it's always the product. It's always our customer service. And it's actually no secret ingredient. These two things: make better product, make your customer happy. Because also, if I have a company but my customers are not happy with the product, I personally consider it a failure.
Now that the company has already been crossing that $1 million mark for some years, a million is a very normal thing. It's about how many millions now. Talking about future growth, have you guys actually got any company trying to acquire you before? Any approach?
Unfortunately, so far, not yet. Not yet.
Or hints, but not yet going to real talk.
Not yet, but I think I don't know if there's companies outside who is looking at us. If there's any, they can get my email in it. But what we want to do is we aspire to build it to a level where someone can take it over and then grow further. But if not, along the way, I'm having a lot of fun building the company for the people. It's fine. I came to a conclusion. You know what? The problem is that e-commerce companies are not that sexy. But I don't consider myself ourselves as just e-commerce company. We are an outdoor equipment company that happens to use e-commerce as the main channel of our sales, right? If you take away e-commerce, we would be a retail company, but still a product company. So we will eventually be acquired, I believe, right? But for the time being, we are having a lot of fun just doing it. Just coming up with, seeing your idea materialize in front of you makes a lot of, give you a lot of joy.
Maybe I'll ask you the other thing, right? Maybe not so much acquisition then. Were there anyone who actually came to you, ask you and say like, hey, can I invest in a company and take a part in it? I bet that is more common, right?
Correct.
How do you select the right investor?
I think for us, we thought about it, and when I say us, it's me and my partner. So we thought about it in a very clear manner already. If the investor brings more than just money, right? Because money is not the exact thing we need. Either they bring the expertise know-how in the outdoor market, their expertise know-how in the expansion of an outdoor equipment brand or any other brand as a matter of fact, or the good know-how in online, right? Then that would be something that we can consider. Right, because the investor should come in and not just give money. The investor should come in and scale the company 5 to 10 times at least, you know, 3 to 10 times. If they can't do that, and it doesn't fit our puzzle. You see, that's the it's not about the money, it's about the expertise that you can bring into the game and how, you know, you can propel us further.
Do you have any further plan of how to actually grow your business? Because when it comes to the outdoor equipment market, a lot of people say that it's a very niche market.
Yep.
And the numbers is only in Malaysia. And if you're talking about Malaysia alone, population itself is not big.
Yep.
So any plans to actually go overseas or expand further?
The misconception about Malaysia's market size is actually quite, I think it's okay. It's sizable, especially for the outdoor market. Because when we are talking about outdoor, we are not only talking about camping and hiking. Scuba is under outdoor as well. You know, sports generally is under outdoor as well. So if we were going to expand horizontally, we would be touching other categories as well. And that increases our market size from camping to hiking to running to scuba. And it's not impossible for us to do. We just need market expertise. And when it comes to expanding internationally, what I personally, as the owner of the company, want to do is to serve the Malaysian market first. And to be very strong in Malaysia, because my personal perception is there's nothing wrong with being small. Sometimes small can be beautiful. You can serve the Malaysian market. For example, I'll give you an example, right? You don't hear there's Cambridge everywhere because they are sold in UK only. They are strong. They are sold. It's hard to get another Cambridge and it's fine. Right, same goes for us. If PTT Outdoor is only in Malaysia, but it's one of the strongest in Malaysia in the outdoor equipment market, I'm totally cool. But because we are very focused on tropical climate equipments, so our equipments is very suitable for tropical climates. Our expansion is the whole belt within the tropical climate. Yeah, so we are not only talking about Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Indonesia, but we can talk about Brazil, places which is far away, because we focus on the climate. A lot of the equipments out there is for European climate, four season. Ours, if you use the four season here, you will be like in a sauna, for example. The market is huge, but I want to serve the Malaysian market first. I want to be amazing here, because if you can't even serve your own local market, what makes you think we have a chance to be in another foreign country, not understanding the culture, not understanding the language, and you can win? Is a whole different market. So being strong in Malaysia first, then we will expand to other countries, and I'm not in a rush for that.
And not just that, like you say, if it's a climate play as well, in a way, Malaysia is one of the most sports to play with.
Yeah.
We are one of the most famous natural outdoor place in the world.
Aside from Indonesia. Yeah. In Southeast Asia, people will talk about Malaysia and Indonesia. I mean, East Malaysia is a super hidden gem that a lot of people don't know about.
One more last question regarding the business and running a business, right? Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, when it comes to running a business, they always think about, like, should I have a partner or not? And if I have a business partner, how do I choose the right partner? How do you actually evaluate if you should take up a partnership? And what are some of the risks that's involved? And how do you actually choose the right person?
In the business, you know, we have a partner, Jason Koo. Amazing. I think he's a blessing. Sent from where? Amazing guy. And I dare go as far as if without him, the business won't be here today. For me, choosing a partner, there's two very important points. One is your skill set matching, and one is your personality matching. So skill set matching is how does your skill complement? One of the common issue I see with startups is that the partners or the co-founders, all three of them or all two of them, all same skill one. What are you good in? Marketing, marketing, marketing. You got a bit of a problem over there, right? Because then who's going to take care of the numbers, right? So for me, for example, I'm good at marketing, I'm good at sales, but I'm not the best at numbers and crunching numbers and all that. Jason is amazing at that, but he's not good at sales. So somehow it becomes a natural fit that we both became a partner. Right, because his skills complements my skill, and it will bring again towards the betterment of the company. Because I can push the front, he can take care of the back.
He's a data guy, right?
He's a data guy. He knows his number, and he will feed me with information that I need. Like, hey, don't push this one so hard. Okay, you know. Then you know, I will know when to stop. If without that, you will just keep pushing. As a marketing person, you always want more sales, right? You will just keep pushing without knowing that behind is burning already. The second one is the personality side. I think a good partnership should be of two person with very different personality. I don't know about you and your partner, but I'm more of the outgoing, you know, talk to people, I'm cool. Jason prefers being more laid back, chill, camping, you know. You spend time with the family, then yeah. I'll be like, I'm out there, you know, in networking events. There's that complementary behind there. So I think two partners should always complement each other in business, especially because there's a lot of fallout that can happen. And if these two is okay, you will be out of each other's way also. Because let's say if both of you are in marketing, then you're like, I have this idea. And then your idea is like that, and then we clash, right? You have to trust your partner also that, okay, for me, I have this marketing idea. He'll be like, okay. And then for him, it's like, okay, these numbers is like this. We need to run it like this. Can you do it? Can? Okay, jalan. The risk of not having a partner is higher than the risk of having a partner because a lot of people think they can do solopreneur, but they don't have the desired skill set to run a business because after so many years in a business, let's be honest, it's not easy. I'm good in marketing, but I'm not good in numbers. Yeah. And it will crumble right under your feet, right? So people think they can, but cannot. You need a partner which can take care of different important facets of the business.
I think one of the biggest struggles for anyone when they start a business and then meet a partner, right? Which is, it's either you started few people together or either you started first and someone joined you in, right? The biggest question to ask is how much of shares to give that person? How much of equity to share out, right?
Yep.
Do you have any idea or for you personally, what are some thought process that you consider when deciding on the equity?
When Jason joined up 4 years into our business, it was more on the equity and also a full-time salary kind of arrangement and over a vesting period. So year by year, the equity goes higher and higher and higher because we want commitment as well and it is agreed upon. So for me, I look at cash flow first. At that point, how much can I pay this person, my partner, right? And then if I don't have that much, then I offer equity to have some skin in the game. One of the mistakes is a lot of startups overvalue themselves. Before the partner even have a chance to come in, they're like, we are worth, I don't know, X million. So I'm just going to give you 5%, which will be worth, you know, X million by 2023 or something like that, right? But the fact is, that percentage or that valuation only matters when you actually cash out. When you finally IPO or when you finally sell your business, or else it's just going to remain a number.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't make any sense. There's only two, exit, IPO, or someone buys you over, or else it's just numbers in the sky. So don't pick it too high. I think it's a more of an art discussion than science. You need to talk to your partner and be like, okay, where do we go from here? See if you can agree on that mutual goal in terms of numerical numbers and then proceed from there. And I think as the founder, there's times where you have to drop your ego.
Do you have a rough guide for people out there to actually have a reference? Like maybe if your company is at this stage, this is the kind of percentage that you can consider between here to here, like that.
For startup companies, I would advise not to give more than 30%. Usually, of course, 50% is the no-brainer. But also don't give more than 30% because then after 30%, you'll be very easily diluted and you don't have much space to move around with. Somewhere within the 10 to 20% range should be a comfort level because in the future, you need to know that there might be other investors who might want to come
That's right,
as your business builds. So you want to leave enough space. Or else if you give 30%, another comes in at 10, another comes in at 15, then you suddenly lost all your control, right? You lost your 50%. Done. So it's a very dangerous zone to play with. I would rather they don't have a partner first, build it up, and then find a partner who is comfortable with, you know, 10, 20%, 25% maybe if you want to push it, they'll be fine.
I think it really largely depends on where your company is at and what do you want. It's more of an art than science, right? Naturally, as your company becomes less risky, you're earning more, things are healthier, what you're offering is usually lower.
Yep.
Yeah, and usually it's a play around between how much of salary you give and
correct.
Yeah, how much of equity.
Yep.
And the higher a salary means usually a lot lesser.
And a good precursor, for example, Jason, I admire him for that. When he first joined, I told him, you sure you want to take so little salary? And I admire him for that. And he has a family. Get this? He has a family, a wife and a kid, a newly born, right? And he was willing to take a lower salary because he said, we're going to build this together. And then one day, I can take more, but not today. And if this kind of partner talks to you like that, you're like, oh, okay, he will help you. Because he was taking bare minimum at that time, very bare minimum. So those are intangible character. Because some would come in and say, hey, I want 20,000. I've got 20,000 to give you. You know
what I mean? Like, can I employee? Can I? Not, yeah, not a partner. Yeah, not a partner, yeah.
And rental also not enough. Really. So sometimes it's like that. You need to evaluate the person also.
So yeah. If there's one question that people out there, if they are entrepreneur themselves and they are looking for a partner, if there's one question that they can ask this person, what do you recommend that question to be?
I think it should be, what can you do for the company? That's it. Yeah. Because if they want to be a partner, I would assume that they already done enough research. You know, they know what they can do. And then they even can come up with a plan already. Not just, oh, I like your company. You know, I like you as a founder.
Yeah.
Right? They would know you inside out before they even try to propose you to be a partner. And then they would be able to tell you the what. Okay, I think this is not so okay with your company. Your website sucks. Your product sucks. I can help you fix the website, fix the product, come up with whatever, and then we'll be a good partner. Yeah. So you need to know what they can do.
That's true. I think sometimes when like people come over, and depending on the stage or company, right? If you're in the early stage, it will be more like, oh, what do you want me to do? Let me do for you.
Yeah.
That kind.
Yeah.
But usually when your company is already taken off, it's already at a certain level.
Yeah.
I think what we want sometimes is people will come in and say, like, you have a plan, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I may not take a plan, but it shows me that you actually really care about a company.
Yep.
There are different sites that you're offering.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were to just ask me, oh, I can do anything, why not you tell me I do for you, right? Bro, I can just hire, bro.
Yeah, yeah, I can hire someone and tell them to do it. Yeah.
I don't need you, bro.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. I want people who can see what I cannot see.
Yeah, and think for themselves, how are we going to propel this company? That is very hard to find.
That's right. Let's go into the part of talking about you and money, right?
Okay.
Now, obviously, as you grew this business, you became richer and richer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did it change how you view money and how you handle money?
Yes, it did. So, I think at the beginning, we said that money is always in lack. Now, I see it more as in abundance. I like to change my mindset to there is always money out there. It depends on how you get it, right? And also, another perception that I recently, this is quite recent, it was last year, is money is the vehicle. I see it as the vehicle to achieve your personal goals or whatever dreams, but it's not the end all be all.
Yep.
Yeah, I choose not to be controlled by it. I choose not to chase it so much and instead focus on other things, because I realize if you keep thinking about it, you keep wanting it, you kind of like, that's your only purpose. And if you don't get it, you feel very sad about it. That too belief, right? There is available in abundance and it's only a vehicle but not the end all be all. Right, that's my new perception of money.
Right. Is there any specific incident or experience that led you to this sudden change along the way?
Going back, right, as a business, we almost crumbled once. It was during COVID, and that time we didn't have much money. Of course, the COVID happened. Although e-commerce business went up, ours went down because we are in the outdoor industry. No one can go outdoor, right? No one can go hike, no one can go camping. So we went almost zero overnight for a long period of time before we found out how to survive. And at that point, even without money, we have the team operating. Yeah. And that changed my perception that I always thought that, okay, if I have money, the team will stay, right? But it's not so. I didn't have money, but the team stayed as well. To tahan, to build the company, it was very heartwarming one at that point. And that changed my perception towards money. I don't want to chase it anymore. I just want to do good products, do a good business, have a good team. That's about it. Money is the byproduct.
Right. Yeah. So that time, your staff actually knew that like the company was struggling.
Oh, yeah. Our company is very transparent. Everyone can see the number. Not everyone outside, but, you know, everyone within the team can actually see the number, and they saw what it means to have zero.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Zero
and
is...
Did anyone of them approach you and say like, hey boss, kosong already, wait.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
How are you going to pay my salary?
No, actually, they did not. Some even offered to take odd jobs to help us out.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's crazy. And as a matter of fact, we did. Just to survive, we took design jobs at that time. Other companies, right, because they cannot cope with their e-commerce, we did design jobs, we did some website design also.
Wow, so your staff came together and said, let's do all this to help the company survive.
We have skill anyway, yes, they say that. And then I'm like, are you guys sure? Okay, it's not in your JD, you know. You all don't have to do this one. And then they're like, it's okay. You know, and those website design at that time was charging very cheap, just to help people build a website. Everyone wanted an e-commerce website at that time. We had the skills they didn't have, right? So we went out, honestly, to build website for people.
Wow.
Yeah, just to survive the pandemic. So that changed my perception on money. That changed my perception on relationship, because I believe that if you're always chasing money, and the people won't follow you. I think your staff also will be like, yeah, this one, money crazy one, right? But if you really care about people, if you really have a heart for them, that shows that, you know, they will be helping you back when the time comes.
I'm sure that that also shows you the loyalty of a staff and let you to be even more generous with them when the company is making money, right?
Yeah. We try to shout as much as possible. Right. We can't earn everything in the world. We can't spend everything in the world. So why not share it out?
Now, let's go to the part then, right? Since we're talking about being generous to the people and spending the money. Can you share with me, right? What is the most money that you ever made for yourself in a year?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. Like, it's a comfortable amount.
Let's not go too in depth.
I know that the tax man
can find.
I don't remember.
I'm sure you report your tax.
Yeah.
Right? Now, the thing is this. When you first made your first amount, right? That significant amount could be the 100,000 or the 200,000 or something like that. What was the first thing that you do with that money?
I can tell you, but you won't believe me. I saved up most of it.
Alright.
Yeah, so when I got the first bunch of huge money, I saved up most of it because personally, I'll tell you, story is I'm quite a minimalist person. I don't like having stuff. Not STAFF, but STUFF. I feel like having stuff is very... Because the first you need to buy stuff, then you need to throw
maintain
away...
Maintain the stuff.
Maintain the stuff, you know, and then you need to throw away the boxes, and then you have more stuff, and then you need to ask people to come and take the stuff and dispose it. And then you eventually have more and more and more stuff, so it gets a bit frustrating. I mean, like, for example, I have 3 pair of shoes. One running, one hiking, one climbing, that's it. And one sleeper, right? I don't even have a proper, like, casual going to cocktail kind of shoe. So I'm quite a minimalist. So when I got that huge amount of money, most of it, I saved it up. Because like my mom used to teach me, right, save it up. So I put it in... mutual funds, I think.
Right.
Robo investors, ETFs, and all those. And it didn't make a loss. It was there, like it's just floating there. So, truth be told, I didn't spend that much on a big purchase. I think there is lifestyle improvements, small lifestyle improvements, but not nothing.
Like what?
Like, for example, if I go Chap Fun, right? I take more chicken, right?
last time don't take too much.
No, you take two only. Now you take five. You know,
take five la. Oh, now see got chicken and pork. Now man, take two only la.
Don't take a fish also. Take. I not see that. So lifestyle improvement, and you know you can spend more on things like PTs. I take Muay Thai PTs because I don't want to go to group classes. Sometimes I want to learn faster.
Right.
Those are small...
Things that you're willing to spend
Correct. I think those are small luxuries. For example, I don't want to go group class because it's 2 hours. You don't learn that much. I take PT.
Right.
I'm willing to pay. I think same goes for some people who like take PT for gym because you don't know how to do. You take PT.
That's right.
10 sessions. They will teach you everything about your body, muscle parts and all that. It's something that you're willing to spend for. Yeah,
that's
so that one, I think I spend a bit on convenience. I drive to KL instead of taking train. Last time...
More willing to drive now.
Yes. Last time, and not that much money, so you take the train. Right? Even if it takes 4 hours door to door. Now, I want to save time, so I just drive. In the future, maybe when I have more money, then I'll hire...
Take plane.
No, driver. You hire a driver, you can do your work.
That's true.
It's those kind of small luxuries in life. I didn't have any big purchase. Property investment, I had it early on. So when I got that second batch of huge money, I didn't buy any property anymore. Yeah. And I spend it on people, like the staffs. I like to buy them food. My mom, I like to buy her whatever that she wants. It's those simple things that makes you happy.
I think it's good, right? Because it means that you already figured out what makes you happy in spending, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like perhaps for you, it doesn't really matter what car you drive. I mean, just like me, right?
Yeah.
I don't really care what car I drive.
Yeah.
I'm more willing to spend on classes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I can go and take up coaching a few thousand ringgit.
Correct.
For golf coaching.
Yep.
And yeah.
And you know that your improvement will be that much faster. So
correct.
I think
it makes me happy.
Whatever makes you happy. Honestly, like if spending, again, no judgment on people who like to spend on cars or luxury trips.
It's okay. If it makes you happy, go ahead, right?
But you don't have to conform to their happiness, right?
Yes.
Like we see Instagram all the time. Wow, people like, you know, they wake up and then they see swimming pool and then they see sunset. I'm like, I can see sunset in Malaysia also. You know?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's okay for me.
Yeah, yeah. Sunset was nice one, right? So you don't have to conform to their reality. You have to, in retrospect, see your own reality.
That's right.
And for me, it's about, you know, working out really good, save time, parents are happy, simple things like that.
Yeah. I think recently one thing that hit me about what would be worth spending on is to hire even better staff, right? Yeah. Or higher management, I would say. Not even better. No, it's higher management staff.
Yep.
Why is it so? It's because as the company grew, right, I start to realize that management itself is a huge burden, right? Mm-hmm. And because I have kids these days, I would love to spend more time with them.
Yep.
And if you don't have someone managing the stuff for you, you are doing it yourself.
Yep.
It will lead you to actually spend even more time at work.
Correct.
And so I don't mind hiring management staff, although it's more expensive to hire management staff.
Agreed.
And for me, that is like, okay lah, I know I can pay myself, but might as well I hire someone and they do the management for me, then I can go back earlier.
Yep.
Yeah, so that I can spend more time with my family.
And if you think about it, these kind of team members, staff, for example, will help you grow the company. They're not just base staff who business as usual. You ask me do A, I do A lah. But management staff, in my opinion, is those who are very aligned with you, and without you telling them also, they will come up with ideas.
Right.
Hey, let's try this, let's try this. And then you will see the growth from then on.
That's
so
right.
The money that we pay is always worth it.
So that's the thing that I think we all want in life, right? I think the danger is that for people, when they make that money, they get lost in it. They forget that actually money is actually just a tool, a vehicle, like you say.
It's a vehicle.
Right?
To buy you whatever your goal, and some people's goal is luxury, some people's goal is people's Instagram likes. Some is your time.
Yes.
For you is time. For me is time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when we run business, I think we are very mutual in a way that when we run business, we know how scarce time is. You get to work at 9. By the time you know it, you 7 o'clock already.
That's right.
Not done, you know. Things are not done. You know, the day is not over. So time flies very fast.
That's
when
right.
you do business.
Moving on to the last question here. Reflecting on your journey so far.
Yeah.
Going from part-time to deciding to going full-time in your business right now, and then growing it from a small business to a multi-million business. What is one advice that you wish you would have known earlier that you can share with the audience?
For me, very personal one is, I think it would be hike at your own pace, or run at your own pace, they like to say. Because a lot people come from different backgrounds. They have different funding, they have different sources, and everyone starts not at the same starting line, especially for business. And the story, this is back then when I first started, I always look at other people and be envious. Let's not kid ourselves, right? I'm a human also. So when I look at my peers who are raising this amount, raising that amount, then I get envious. And I spend time, you know, looking into their business. How are they doing better than me? How come they can raise so much fun? How come I can't, for example, right? But I wished, you know, I would have just focused on my business. Those time wouldn't have been wasted. Good for them. They managed to do their side. Just focus on myself.
Any last things that you want to share with the audience that you think that they must know in order to be more successful and better at money?
One thing that changed my lifestyle, I think, is budgeting. Budgeting is the most important thing. I think if anyone doesn't know about budgeting, they should go and learn. Both personal and company, right? Because if someone is in a cash constrained position, I believe they can get it out through budgeting and adjustment of life. For example, let's say you're earning 10,000, you know, and they always, you know, they always like to show one makan minum bagi mak mertua, and then down there negative 50. Then I start looking at that, and then I'm like, there's a lot of things you can adjust. You don't have to makan, you must, but your maybe entertainment, cut it out. So when people learn how to budget out, and after a period of 1 year, they'll be very fine, man, because budgeting and keeping to the budget is super important. Writing it down, being very realistic with yourself. So budgeting on a personal level, hyper important. For me, I do both personal and the business. The business is like how much you earn, how much you pay out, how much is your stocks, how much. You can actually predict the future before it happens. Yeah. Kind of, you can have a feel of it. So then, like, for example, Jason will be like, okay, this month, this is all our expenses. This is what we predict. Is that okay? Then you get a number. So budgeting, very underrated, very, very underrated skill. Both on a personal level, because people just spend, and you spend very fast, when you scan your QR code and all that, before you know it, it's like, wow, you know, broke my budget. Another advice I would give is put it on automated. I put my savings on automated. So the moment I get my gaji, boom, a whole chunk goes off. You can set automation for your how much goes into investment. And I do that because it's something that you should do unconsciously.
Yes.
Yeah. Not before you pay all the bills. Sorry,
not after
you pay all the bills. It's before all you pay all your bills, then suddenly a chunk of your money is
gone already.
Yeah. And then you start figuring out how to pay your bills and all that. It should be like that because the saving goes first. Or else you're gonna pay all your bills and then you're gonna give yourself excuses, right? Maybe this month I don't wanna spend so much. I don't wanna save so much, like I need to somehow pay for tuition or whatever.
Yes.
Becomes very difficult.
So thank you very much, Mike, for joining us. I hope you guys learned something from this episode.
Yeah.
And if you like it, do hit the like and subscribe button. Mm-hmm. And go and check out PTT Outdoor if you want to get yourself an affordable and high-quality camping gear.
Yep.
Thank you very much for joining us. See you next time.
Thank you.